The views expressed on this Turnbuckle Tabloid live stream or Turnbuckle Tabloid podcast episode do not reflect the views, thoughts, or opinions of the RageWorks brand, including the RageWorks podcast network, RageWorks content partners, advertisers, and affiliates. Viewer and listener discretion is advised.
What's going on, everybody? It's your boy, Jay the Red Santee, host of Turnbuckle Tabloid. And as you know, here on our show, we are big fans of music. Pop, R&B, reggae, rock, whatever have you. We love to play it here on the show. But what we want to play is your music. And how can we do that? So you guys want to take and share in our Patreon. Ladies and gentlemen, go to our Patreon at patreon.com/Turnbuckle Tabloid. And just give us a small donation and we would love to share your music on our show. Whether you're an artist, you're a singer, you're a ROM, you're a producer, whatever it is that you guys do in the field, we want to share your music to the masses and our hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of listeners and viewers and followers. So make sure you go to our Patreon at patreon.com/Turnbuckle Tabloid and be a part of our show as much as we want to be a part of sharing your talent. So hope to hear from you guys soon and enjoy the show. Me to believe that New York City can get this hot, but I have to say that I give much love to the fact that air conditioning is the greatest invention in the world, in the history of inventions. Everybody will say light or the telephone or the internet. Nah, fuck that. AC is the greatest invention in the history of fucking technology and science. I'm sorry. I think that we'd have been able to find a way to live without the other things. But air conditioning, especially during the summer, fuck you. Hands down, probably the greatest thing ever that ever occurred. But with that being said, it'll defeat the purpose of why I would do this, because without the internet, I can't have a conversation with you guys about what's going on in my podcasting world. Not only the Turnbuckle Tabloid world, but what we here listen to and what we enjoy. Early on in Turnbuckle Tabloid's years, we were very bitter because we sat there and he said to ourselves, we went and said, you know what? Fuck that. We're the best fucking podcast ever, and we shot the shit and called people out on their bullshit. After some years, we sat down and we looked at ourselves and said, you know what, we're doing well, we're making connections, we're okay, we don't need to do that anymore, we're good. And after listening to a few podcasts, I thought and I said, yeah, why even challenge anything else? If I'm listening to a show or friends to the show who are doing well and they sound really good, why not share to the masses who listen to us on a weekly basis? So this is when the idea came up for I'll Put You Over, which is Turnbuckle Tabloid's offshoot for wrestling podcasts that aren't ours. It's those that we enjoy. And it's not the podcasts that are the mainstream celebrity known wrestling podcasts like Eric Bischoff or Arn Anderson or Chris Jericho. No, it's for individuals who are like us, who are in the same kind of world that we live in and are doing a podcast that's basically doing it for the love of the show. I appreciate those who, when you listen to them, that they're you don't hear the forced monologue to where they have to put something over. I love the fact that when I'm listening to a podcast of this magnitude, it's about individuals who love the product and they talk and share their opinions and history of wrestling as we do. So on this episode, we do like we usually do, where we share two episodes of podcasts that we enjoy. And one of them is basically we consider family because we advertise them on the show, but we also admire their look on the wrestling genre history as well. And another one is though that it's a fresh look at their outlook as well as the history of wrestling. So let's just get into the whole business thing, which we do here in Turbical Tabloid. So before we continue, make sure you check us out on all the social media outlets. Check us out on the Like group page on Facebook. Check us out on Instagram at Turbical Tab, as well as on Twitter at Turbical Tab. And always check us out on the YouTube, the Anchor, other outlets that's available, which I didn't know that we were out there on the social media outlets, but apparently we are getting love there as well. Thank you for everybody who's sharing us without us knowing. Check out Turnbuckle Tabloid. And as always, check us out on all the podcasting outlets. Check us out on iHeart, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, wherever the fuck you can get Turbical Tabloid, we're available. So make sure you check us out on all the podcasting outlets. But if you don't go there, you could always get us at RageWorksNetwork.com, where you could connect with everything that's in the RageWorks family. You get Black is the New Black, you'll get Trek Untold, you get Toys and Techs, and of course you get us there. Anywhere that you could want to connect with the world of podcasting with RageWorks is right there at RageWorksNetwork.com. And you could also check us out at RageWorks.net because, you know, anyone who listens to us, we're all connected to the one thing, which is pop culture. You got movies, TV shows, comic books, video games, whatever it is. It's all connected at RageWorks.net. I mean, come on. Why go anywhere else when you go to RageWorks.net? RageWorks.net, we do it for the culture, baby. Pop culture, that is. So Chokeslam Radio is a seasonal podcast that they basically break down certain moments in wrestling history or certain moments of what's going down in the current history. Let me explain. It's not like us where we do a breakdown week by week of the current environment of wrestling. With them, they find a certain area of the current and the previous history of wrestling, and the three of them just basically break it down in their own form. The main host of the show is Jim Wrestle, and we have Miguel Sosa as well, who's been a part participant of the show for some time. And I feel as though that there's been a rotation in the third participant of the show. And from the episode that I was listening to, they had Vibes on this episode. I don't know who he is, but I must say that he was very studious on the wrestling game. He pretty much knew a lot of things that a lot of so-called wrestling fans think that they know. I was very impressed by his history of knowing when and where matches occurred and how also the reasoning why wrestling had their hiccups and especially when it comes to the current days of wrestling. So on this episode that I listened to, it was of the Hall of Fame snubs. The Hall of Fame snubs is one aspect of wrestling that we've seen on social media where people bitch about and whine about and have issues about. I have to say that this intrigued me, and this is why I wanted to break down the show and share with you guys and tell you, listen, the reason why I do the show is to put them over. And this was the episode where I said, yeah, let's talk. I want to have a conversation about what they're talking about. And hopefully you guys would gravitate to them as well.
Hey everyone, welcome to another edition of Choked Out Radio. I am your host, Jim Russell. A lot to talk about in this ongoing season, and eventually we'll release these episodes. I have Vibes in the building.
In the building.
And Maheem Bey.
In the building. How's it going, folks?
Great. So this episode stemmed from a text conversation we were having a few weeks ago, and we're going to make this a reality. As far as Hall of Fame snubs, right? The WWE Hall of Fame snubs, right? So as you guys know, I'm a very sports guy, right? So I relate it to baseball in the sense that I think it should be the following criteria, right? So of course there should be some sort of like retirement period, right? I don't like where you stop wrestling one day and the next year you get inducted in, right? So that's what I think, right? This is what I think should be like, you know, the Hall of Fame is like the top, you know, 0.5%, 1%, like the best ever, right? In every sport, right? So in the sport of pro wrestling or WWE sports entertainment, I think it should be based on this, right? On this criteria. Now obviously we could go back and forth, right? Work rate, psychology, gimmick, whether it's over or not, financially, whether it's you were over, your promos, and also your longevity, right? You can't base it on wins and losses because it is obviously it's a predetermined sport, but championships, I don't know. Again, it's predetermined. But I think, you know, based off that criteria alone, at least it's a good starting point, right? So, and then you have the argument of the politics that are involved. But
one of the first things that gravitated me to this podcast was not only that I knew the individuals who are on the podcast, but it was also the topics at hand and how they discuss and talk about these subject matters. These individuals who talk about the wrestling landscape in the forum and its subject matter and different eras and such, you can tell there's a passion and love for wrestling, and you could tell that they have their gripes, but they also have their love and their reasoning for why they do a show like this. Now, for the discussion about the Hall of Fame, the one thing that gets lost in transition is that it's always to believe that the WWE's Hall of Fame is the be-all, end-all, and it's like, no. The WWE's Hall of Fame is basically their Hall of Fame. It's what they want, is what they, who, them, those, or whatever the fuck, it's who they want to put in. It's not a fan base that votes them in. It's not a joint committee that basically looks at it's a voting or electoral process to where that there's reasoning for it. Hell, you got the former president of the United States who's a Hall of Famer and he's a piece of shit, through my opinion. But there's their criteria, which is the individuals that they put in is for every year, which is who is going to be the big draw for that year of WrestleMania in the Hall of Fame. It's not like how the other Hall of Fames that's out there, like the Cauliflower Club and shit like that. It's different. They represent and acknowledge those who are true wrestling and wrestlers. Even the Wrestling Observer has their own criteria to their Hall of Fame and how they judge wrestlers, and it's skewered because a lot of them is because of who the fuck runs it. Look at how Meltzer runs his shit. It's just shit. You got Kenny Omega in their fucking Hall of Fame there, and why? I never understood this. But when it comes to the WWE's Hall of Fame, it's all about the draw of who's going to want to sit and listen to a speech from them, or how important their contributions to the business correlates to the year in which they are doing their Hall of Fame. So it's an argument to have, but it's also an argument to which you have to say, like, why really care about it? But I wanted to hear their talk, so this was interesting.
Well, I think the problem is that there's one person making the decision.
Right.
You know, I've heard on multiple different shows, especially, you know, Bruce Pritchard, where they've thrown out names. Hey, what about this guy? Hey, what about that guy? And it gets shut down right away. If they had a problem with, you know, with Vince, or Vince has some kind of internal beef with them, they're off the list for that year.
Vince makes the ultimate call. It's not like I said, the MLB, where you have press and fans who make the decision whether or not Roger Clemens will go in or Barry Bonds will go in. It's Vince who makes that ultimate decision, because at the end of the day, like I said, it's about who's going to have the biggest pop during the Hall of Fame ceremony. Do you think that the past year, the reason why, because of the pandemic, they slid in those individuals that they did, like a Eric Bischoff or a Molly Holly, or those guys, you thought that was done intentionally because they wanted to do it? It was like, no, they felt this was like one or two things would happen. It was like, A, we didn't want them to be more over than the product, or B, it was like, yeah, we just needed filler and that was it. So let's listen on.
Which I think is ridiculous, because at the end of the day, you know, these people busted their ass, put, you know, their bodies on the line for our entertainment, mm-hmm. and it shouldn't be determined by one guy. I think that there should be a voting system, yeah. Similar to how they used to do back in the day when it was a territory system. Everybody would meet and everybody would agree, okay, this guy's going to be the NWA champion. Okay,
never gonna
well, then
happen.
They should all meet
never
this guy happen. Or this girl is going to be inducted in the Hall of Fame that year. I think it should be based on the criteria that you did mention, because then it gives it a more realistic feel. I also think that there actually needs to be a physical building for the Hall of Fame.
That's in the process. I believe that's in the works, because with what they're doing with the National Treasure Show, the WWE Treasure Show on A&E, and their association with NBC and Universal, which, by the way, if anybody's going to buy the WWE network and shit is going to be, not WWE, but WWE, the company, it's going to be Universal. They're going to get it because they already have the, can you imagine if Disney just buys it and Universal just sitting there with their dicks in their hands going, are you fucking serious? Really? This is who you're going to fucking up it? No. This is where it's all going to boil down to. They're going to have everything go along the way to Universal, NBC Universal, and WWE is going to be bought out by them, and Universal Studios will have the Hall of Fame slash, you know, WWE, I guess museum or whatever the fuck you want to call it, but that's exactly what's going to happen then and there. So,
cause right now it's just, you know, it's just an event every year that people stand up there for 45 minutes to an hour talking, for their acceptance. So I think that there should be like a physical.
Believe me, you'll be standing next to Andre the Giant statue
and visit, like, the Baseball Hall of Fame
soon.
Was it upstate New York? Yeah, yep. People go
Cooperstown. You
know, I'll get like I'll give you an example. Derek Jeter retired, and they knew that he was eligible for the Hall of Fame after 5 years. The hotels were already booked 5 years in advance for people to go out there, so they wouldn't miss his Hall of Fame
induction
ceremony.
Now, I agree with that, but here's a problem. WWE is afraid to do something like that in that facet because they have done their offshoot outside of wrestling stuff, and a lot of that stuff has not been successful. For instance, remember the WWE restaurant? Remember that? I was there. I went to that shit. I thought it was cool. The problem was with that shit was they didn't have food that was themed to the wrestlers. They didn't have a Stone Cold beer or a Rock Bottom Poontang pie dessert or Mick Foley burger or nothing like that. They didn't have that. They just had regular food or regular thing, and they just showed wrestling events on their screens. And that's what fans wanted, and they didn't get it. And that's why it was a bust. So I think WWE is afraid to have some kind of theme venue that they think would draw fans. Now, Hall of Fame is what the fans would want to see, but how long and how lucrative and financially would that draw?
Exactly. So you think it should be, you brought up a great point. Should it be, you know, in baseball, they have the writers vote, and that's all, and that's controversial in itself, right? Should it be a set of writers or just a committee that's formed, or yes, should it be fans voting in and out, or
mixed them as well? What do you think? Yes.
I think it should be a committee. Leave the fans out of it because fans are very biased. And as you can see how toxic some wrestling fans can be, leave them out. They don't get a say.
Okay. The only thing I object to this because the fans, let's say in MLB and in the NBA, they vote in their favorites, who they believe should be in, and then the committee breaks down their fan favorites into those who should be involved in like an all-star game or the Hall of Fame like that. So you always get that fan feedback because that's what you're doing it for. You want that fan interaction. We could sit here and we can vote for Lanny Poffo and to get into the Hall of Fame. But as long as the interaction is there and we could see that our voices were heard, that helps for the fan base to continue and to be part of this. And we've seen where the fan base interaction has been dismissed, where you see the Cyber Sundays, where we see the greatest matches. I know in every Cyber Sunday match where the fuck the best match that we wanted was the tables and chairs or the fucking a cage match or whatever, but it always gets voted out because they know they knew that that's what it was going to be voted highest, but they had to do the best booking for the event. So I think the same thing could be said for the Hall of Fame. Listen, we want to hear the fans' votes. We want to hear what it is. But the big committee, the big majority of the committee would have to say that, yeah, we'll acknowledge what the fans want, and we'll do the top three of said voting process, and then we'll decide from that. So let's listen on.
Pay your ticket. Go watch it. Keep your mouth shut. That's it. It should be people within the industry. It should be legends. It should be past Hall of Famers.
You know, I agree with that. The past Hall of Famers. I
have a say. All right, who's going to join us next? But it should be like a committee of about 10 people. And I'm not only talking about people within the WWE. I mean, like, industry.
Can't do that because it's a WWE Hall of Fame, and a lot of the people who are not in the Hall of Fame through WWE are bitter or don't give a fuck about WWE. So it's a little bit more difficult. And if you're going to talk about doing that with dirt sheet writers or pro wrestling writers, it goes the same way as it does with the MLB, that it gets skewered and it gets to the point where certain individual writers or editors are bitter because certain wrestlers, they want to do interviews or they disregarded them or they're on social media bashing them, so they will never give them the credit that it's due.
You know, New Japan, AEW, TNA, they should all decide who goes in. The same way every territory decided who was going to be the NWA champion and who was going to travel to the territories back in the day. I think it should be the same way.
Not the same thing. It's not, especially for the Hall of Fame, it's not the same thing. Sounds good on paper. Sounds good when you vocalize it, but it's not the same thing. There was another aspect that they talked about on this episode where they talked about how to induct and who to induct into their Hall of, into the Hall of Fame. One of the biggest discussions was the separation of tag teams as opposed to an individual. For example, Bret Hart, let's say you put Bret Hart into the Hall of Fame. He goes in as an individual, but his tag team run with the Hart Foundation is Hall of Fame moment. They weren't very pleased with the multiple Hall of Fame inductees, as in Hogan going in, Flair going in multiple, Scott Hall going in multiple, and anybody else who was part of a faction or a tag team. And there was a discussion on whether or not it should be done that way. So let's take a listen to what their thoughts were about that.
I don't like that they induct people multiple times.
Yeah, I don't like.
I think, like, if you're in, that's it. Like, you're in for your body of work. Just induct, like, no. Like the four horsemen. They should have just been inducted individually.
No, you can't.
DX, just induct them individually.
You can't.
Because you got, like...
I don't agree
Kevin
with that.
Nash, you can't. Kevin Nash is in twice.
That's
Shawn
different.
Shawn Michaels is in twice.
Everyone from Chris the Click.
Hart's in twice.
Everyone from the Click is in twice, yo.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Like, okay. There are certain individuals who should be exempt from that kind of acceptance in the Hall of Fame. You mentioned Kevin Nash. Yes, I would not have inducted Kevin Nash as Diesel. That should have never happened. But him going in as an outsider, NWO, Kevin Nash, his run in WCW, that's fine. I get that. How can you separate the greatness that Bret Hart had as a member of the Hart Foundation as opposed to a single run? You can't separate it. You can do it. It's that simple. You can separate it because as a tag team performer, he did exceptionally well. as opposed to also him as a singles run. You can say he was exceptionally well. You could separate those. Those are separate wings that you can give wrestlers. They have their carte blanche and their careers to say that. I wouldn't put in Shawn Michaels as a rocker at the same time and bring him in as a Hall of Famer on the, as a singles, because it doesn't equate the same way. Doesn't. You have to correlate the same with Hogan going in as Hulk Hogan and again going in as Hollywood Hulk Hogan for NWO. It was two great gimmicks that went over great. It's the same guy, but it's two separate gimmicks that went over greatly. You can differentiate those as well. Now, the big one that was mentioned was Ric Flair. You could say Ric Flair was a bigger entity in the Four Horsemen. Okay. So what you do is you want to say that the Four Horsemen could go in without Ric Flair, right? But the big argument is that Ric Flair is the Four Horsemen, right? That's who basically was the face of the faction. But Ric Flair was Ric Flair before the Four Horsemen. He already had the NWA title. He was a Hall of Famer before then, and he was a Hall of Famer after it. Now, if you want to argue saying that Ric Flair shouldn't go in with Evolution, that's fine. Ric Flair was just a sidekick or a face to the faction. But in all honesty, Rick has given that honoree and that honor to be a two-time Hall of Famer. It's different. And the argument is like, okay, in sports, they don't honor Robin Yount as a Hall of Famer for multiple teams. They honor Robin Yount as a Hall of Famer, but he decides to go in as one team. He goes in as one team. He'll go in as a Milwaukee Brewer. But other stadiums or arenas or wherever the fuck it is that he played at will acknowledge him, and they'll put his name on their Ring of Honor or on their board. It that's just, you know, Daryl Strawberry played for the Mets and the Yankees, and if he went into the Hall of Fame, he'll go in as whatever the fuck he wants to go in the Hall of Fame as. But the Yankees and the Mets would honor him on their separate stadiums as their player, as you know, they retire his number on the way they want. Same with Dwight Gooden or whoever. That's just how they will honor them as a teammate-wise. But as for baseball, it's different. For when it's wrestling is multifaceted. So you're going to tell me just because WWE honors him in the Hall of Fame, the Cauliflower Club or NWA is not going to acknowledge fucking Ric Flair because WWE did it? No, he's going to be honored everywhere. And whatever division that it happens, it's going to happen. Tag teams, factions, and singles runs is separated depending on how successful each were done. And that's just, you know, it's just the facts of it.
It's like, oh, I'm going to induct you as Diesel and you're going to get inducted as Kevin Nash. It's stupid. It's the same person playing.
Very much was stupid. That was dumb. And it's not.
It doesn't make any sense. Like,
in my opinion, you know, they should have it under different categories. You know, they should have, you know, and whenever the day comes when they open up a museum, let's say a WWE Hall of Fame museum or whatever, they should have it in categories where, you know, you have the people that have been inducted, you know, individually. They should have like a faction section, you know, like where you have NWO, mm-hmm. or Horsemen, DX. So, because, you know,
Scott Hall goes in as Razor Ramon, but he also goes in under the Outsiders and NWO. That is just, yeah, that's just what it is. He was successful as Razor Ramon in WWF because that's who put him on to that level, but he also got bigger in WCW under Scott Hall and under NWO. You honor both. You want to say that it's the same person, but it's not. He didn't take Razor Ramon and brought it to WCW because he couldn't and he wasn't allowed to, but he showed his greatness on both aspects. So if you want to say that his entire career was brought upon through one gimmick, you can't. It's not. It really isn't. He made it successful under two gimmicks, just like Bret Hart made it successful as a part of a tag team as well as a single. He is great in both aspects because you want to honor the tag team as well as the single person. Jim the Anvil Neidhart doesn't go into the Hall of Fame without being part of the tag team with Bret Hart. And you can't blame Bret Hart for not doing that. The tag team was the tag team that was successful. You can't blame Bret Hart for leaving him out of that. No, the tag team was a great tag team, so bring him in. It's different in wrestling. It's a different thought process. But guys, listen to this. I have to say, you got to listen to Choked Out Radio because there's so much more in this episode that brought me back to my early days of enjoying wrestling. But also, they do it in such a way to where it's not a weekly show where it monetizes it and it breaks down the weekly happenings of wrestling like we do here in Turbo Tabloid. I love how they take a subject matter and they dissect it and they bring in different individuals, or they have their individuals who come in and you get their focal point and their insight, especially those who know their history of wrestling, which these guys do. It's refreshing to hear a community that enjoys the wrestling and can break down different aspects of the wrestling lore and its history. So check out the guys at Choked Out Radio. Right now they're in season 4 and they have a lot of episodes downloaded on YouTube and other areas. Check them out on Choked Out Radio. You don't want to miss it, especially on on YouTube. They're there, Darrelly. And shout out to my guys out there, Miguel, Jim Russell, and whoever comes in on their visitors guest site. It's cool, and I enjoy them. Thanks for being a part of the wrestling lore and a part of the podcasting world. You guys are awesome.
Bring the in-ring action home to your tabletop with the number one wrestling card game in the world, Super Show the Game, and live all your wildest wrestling fantasies without ever taking a chair shot. Available on supershowthegame.com. Order today and join a spectacle so grand it can only be called the Super Show.
Welcome back to episode 13 of the Extra Cooler Show. I am Nick, otherwise known as Extra Cooler, and I am here with Matt, Mike, and Jim. Last time you heard from us, we were breaking down a Monday Night Raw from 1997, where we had the debut of Cactus Jack in the WWF. You can go back in our archives if you want to hear us dissect one of the most classic Raws that really jumpstarts the Attitude Era. And tonight, we'll be breaking down a match that you guys picked, a Kane match.
I still am kind of in shock Like I said last week, I was at work when you guys picked decided that we're going to do a Kane match. And I came back to my phone. I looked at it and it was like this long conversation, like, oh, let's do a Kane match. My first thought was like, I jumped right to Tony Schiavone and went, well, that's going to put some butts in the seat.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I'm excited. I'm excited.
I don't know, man. I'm excited, but not necessarily for Kane. We already touched on Kane and some of his highlights in episode 3. Where we discuss the Royal Rumble 1998. In this episode, we're talking about.
I found this podcast by happenstance. Someone had commissioned a piece of artwork for me, and I end up following the person who created the artwork on Instagram. Didn't know that the person who created the artwork was a podcaster as well until I saw them post on Instagram and update of their podcasts and such. So I said, oh, you know what? Since they did such great work in the art. So I said, let me check out the podcast. So I started listening to the podcast, and their podcast is pretty much similar to what Choked Out does, where they take certain segments of history in wrestling and break it down, be it an episode, be it a generation, be it an era, whatever the case that happened in wrestling, they just take that moment. I have to say, I was very much intrigued by this one because it's somewhat similar to what we do on Turnbuckle Tabloid, because you know there's multiple individuals with opinions, but they also are having a bit of libations going on, meaning there is some kind of free flowing of bubbly. Yeah, they like to drink. So I gravitated to this podcast very easily. So on this episode, they discuss the emergence of Kane when he aligns with X-Pac. This is a throwback, guys. So be ready to get your oldie but goodies on. So let's take a listen to what these guys are talking about on this episode.
Who's got something in the cooler this week? I hope you all do.
I do.
And if it's Fireball, I'm kicking you off the show.
Oh, that would have been we got to coordinate drinks for these shows.
My kind of show.
Fans, what we're going to drink. Fireball, some sort of Kane drink. That would be good. I like that, actually.
Oh, man.
Get your drink on. I'm a fan already. Hands.
Yeah.
That would up and down and then light it up.
We've got new homework for the next one. Special cocktails. I'll start since I'm running my mouth. I'm back to the other half again. I'm off the White Claw train. I might get back into it later tonight.
How dare you?
There's actually an empty White Claw on this table from the last episode. That shows how clean we are in this house. But
I would have dumped him just because he mentioned White Claw. Okay.
I've got another half. It's plates on plates dedicated to the garbage plate. I have the official plates on plates glassware. This is a 10%er. It's what you need to get through a Kane match. So soak it.
Did you use that with your recorder thing?
Yeah, I put that thing to my throat there.
Okay. Oh man, I'm joining the what did they call it? The Juice Mafia?
Or, yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, I've had this before, but as we always say, it's a staple in our house, and just like you guys, it's a Juice Bomb IPA from Sloop. Local brewery.
I'm not opposed to an IPA, but okay, we'll let him get a pass.
I got Corona Light with some lime in there because I'm celebrating the Cinco de Mayo a little bit early today because we're recording on the 4th. Not in this.
Matt, can you edit live on air?
Mike, I have a question. Can you
suck it?
Sorry.
Yeah.
99 calories that bad boy is.
Oh, yeah. It's going to go down like water.
You got the lime wedge in there?
Yeah, it's lime in it.
You better. You better.
Liming it.
K-Fob line.
Okay, so now that we get the introductions in for how the show's going to run, especially when it comes to them sipping back on the libations, they're looking back on August 1999, where, like I mentioned earlier, Kane is, I guess, being introduced to being a part of DX in some way. That's the connection that he makes with X-Pac. That episode of Raw, until I heard this episode, I didn't realize how good and bad Raw can be during that era. But it's also a thing to where it's so good that you remember it, but it's so bad that it's good that it's bad. It's terrible. And these guys here on the show basically break down their their feelings of how that episode went through. So we look at during this episode, we look at how The Rock buries the Big Show during their run during this time period.
Rock's just got so many classic lines. I think he's upset with Big Show, correct?
Oh yeah.
And he's singing his song, "Well, it's a big slow." And my favorite is when he says the crowd saying, "Oh, I'm gonna take a leak. This guy sucks."
He buries the Big Show. Like,
I love my favorite. I love old school Rock.
My
I really do.
Is when he imitates the choke slam.
the most best. Impressive thing I've seen from you is.
Yeah, so I you know, honestly, like, Big Show is still pretty new, right? He showed up in February of this year, and he comes in as a monster, right? That's the idea. But like, this kind of thing, I think, just destroys Big Show in a lot of people's minds, including our own. I'm like, I can't take this guy seriously now because The Rock just shits all over him.
It's funny because this day and age, that if you would do that now, that fans would be like, how could you bury somebody who just came in? You're not even giving them the chance to show themselves, and it's already buried. He's done. And it's like, no, there's a way to put someone over while getting humiliated at the same time. And The Rock was that personality and that individual that can do that, especially in this era.
And he wrecks him. He's like, he's a joke, and Rock is almost too good at what he does here, right?
I don't know if it's because I just listened to Masked Man show with David Shoemaker, and my new friend, Jonathan Bartlett, was on it, and he was talking about ring gear and aesthetically pleasing, which is something I'm constantly harping on. And there's something that's so incredibly jarring to me, and it's the Big Show just standing there in his underwear and his low boots. He's got no knee pads, no elbow pads, and that
as a giant shill look.
Just needs something else, man. He's too big of a dude to just be standing there.
That's what a giant shill look like. Though.
They're hot pants. They're like the short shorts.
I also forget during this era we had Shawn Michaels as the commissioner of Raw, and wasn't the best time for him. He is coming back from the whole I lost my smile and WrestleMania with Stone Cold kind of era, and they bring him back, and it doesn't seem like it's a good fit for him to be a commissioner. And also, there's some form of shenanigans going on with him being commissioner as well. So
after commercial break, we get a limo pulling up, and they're preparing us for Jesse the Body Ventura. And meanwhile, out pops the commissioner in Chicago. He's in Chicago, HBK. And, you know, I can admit, when there's something I don't like, I'm not like that kind of fan who like loves everything that a guy does. I have made this very clear that
I raised my hand to that as well.
To me, he's the greatest of all time. But this era of Shawn Michaels as the commissioner, I did not like at the time. And watching it back,
wholeheartedly agree.
I did not like it at all. It's awful. It just didn't work. It was obviously just a way to get the guy on TV still. But man, it just doesn't do anything for me.
I thought you enjoyed him prancing around the ring. And
that is the part I like. But, you know,
no, he wears hot pants, too, later in this episode. We'll get to that.
He certainly does.
we'll get back to that. But have you ever liked one of these guys when they're coming back as a commissioner? It always kind of stinks.
No.
Right. Like whether it's Kurt Angle or Stone Cold, it's like it always feels shoehorned in there. Like, let's just get him on TV. And
right.
He does what he wants to do. Yeah. And it's like, it doesn't work.
I think also it's like weird because Shawn Michaels doesn't really fit with any of these guys. Like, I don't think he ever had a match with The Rock.
I always said the same thing.
Yeah. Wow. That's
you know, like there's plenty of guys. Like, did he ever have a match with Kane? I don't even know off the top of my head.
I'm more in a line that if Shawn did it now, it's better because they're not his equal when it comes to the roster. Now he's the elder statesman. He's the legend, the Hall of Famer that can GM. If they wanted to do the GM thing, a lot of people are tired of the GM thing. I'm one of those old school guys that, appreciated the old Jack Tunney kind of look where you came out when you needed to come out. I'm a big fan of William Regal on NXT, his kind of role. I'm a fan of that. So I don't need to see you all the time to know that you're a presence. All I need to know is that a name drop or you come out and when a big presentation needs to be executed. I don't need to have Vince or Stephanie or Triple H do it. Your presence is there. For Shawn at that time, it was like these guys are your equal, and it really didn't make sense for them to respect him in that role. I guess it was done purposely, maybe, but okay. But even so, it didn't click even back then when I look at it now. Another thing that these guys look at is X-Pac. X-Pac is polarizing because you have many individuals who love him. And I think it's because of his earlier days and his time in WCW. And you also get those who hate him when he came back to WWF. And it resonated to him getting what is now known as the X-Pac heat, which is just go home. So I like the way these guys have the conversation of why this was an issue with fans during that time.
Well, then we've got an amazing promo with X-Pac and our featured guest Kane backstage where nothing's really said. Just X-Pac screaming into the microphone.
Yes.
Skinny Michael Cole. Yeah, a lot of pointing.
X-Pac's promos have never been good. It's just like him getting madder as it goes on and screaming, as you said. Even like his debut, his return to WF that night after WrestleMania, it's just him screaming. Like, it's like, dude, you got to work a different angle here.
It kind of reminds me of my co-host.
The chain link fence in the background. So it's a little classic. Michael Cole is
Olski
back there.
Yeah, he looks like a greasy Jerry Seinfeld.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
So they discuss the breakup of the Brood when you had Gangrel and Christian and Edge going their separate ways. And it's funny because I would have probably said the same thing on a podcast. And Olski and I should do a cutting a promo about this, especially about this era where we have to separate what's going on and how bad it was done. But take a listen to how these guys basically broke down the Brood separation.
Does anybody have anything to say about the first ever button down versus button down match, Gangrel versus Christian? Because clearly is all about the Hardys ditching Michael PSAs And teaming up with Gangrel.
Super random. Yeah, Christian's got some bizarre music here,
too. It stinks. Yeah, his music stinks.
His entrance is like is way too similar to the Brood. And I think they've been split up for quite a while, enough time.
Yeah.
This whole thing is a hot mess.
I think it's funny. Gangrel, who is kind of a vampire in real life, I get the feeling, is one thing with the puffy shirt. I was like, okay, I believe that. But when you imagine if you were a rep pro wrestler or you're working your way up the ranks, like Edge or Christian, right? And you get to the big time and then you get put into your sexy vampire or whatever it is, right? Like, and you got like, imagine like Christian calling his dad, and who his dad probably like followed Bruno Sammartino when he was a kid or something like that. He's like, hey, dad, they put me in the interview with a vampire gimmick. And like the dad's probably like, my goddamn son's a sexy vampire. Like, that's you feel bad for him, like almost like I would never want to wear the puffy shirt on a Monday Night Raw. Like, please put me in the Big Show trunks at least.
And they wrestle in it.
I hear that Raw here is a Seinfeld episode where it's, I don't want to be a pirate. You have to wear the puffy shirt, Jerry. You have to wear it. You said you was going to wear it, Jerry. It's like, yeah. Although I love the Brood, and yeah, it was kind of hokey. Speaking of hokey, the guys talk about the commercials that run during the era, and you got to remember that they would always throw in, not to say that it's not too far-fetched to what's happening now with New Day being the Snickers commercials and whoever the case may be, but they had commercials where The Rock was in a Chef Boyardee commercial, as well as Mick Foley's was in one as well. And the guys here elaborate on it.
It's 13-minute interview. Anybody want to get Chefy with it?
Oh, do I?
Oh, do I?
So I forgot about this.
I did my homework, and I immediately, because on Peacock, it doesn't allow you to screen capture anymore. So I have my iPad and my phone, and I'm recording.
I actually had to look this up.
Commercial.
I died watching this
from the iPad screen just to send to these knuckleheads, just to be like,
in laughter.
I totally forgot about this like cheap knockoff Rock commercial for Chef Boyardee, where it's a rap song and a cheap knockoff of Getting Jiggy with It from Will Smith. Second time we're talking about Will Smith in this episode too. But oh my God, is this thing gold? It is absolutely hilarious.
I might need to post that on TikTok.
A pimping video too, right? It's like,
yeah,
like,
yes, on the boat, yes, and everything. And anybody that, like, obviously everybody knows what The Rock's up to these days. He's like the biggest man in Hollywood. And the thought of The Rock eating Chef Boyardee, you know, at the end he takes the scoop, like, and it's just, anybody that's ever had Chef Boyardee or anything like that, you know exactly what I'm talking about. That stuff is disgusting.
That's my big problem with this whole commercial. Nobody eats beefaroni on a boat, man. That's a problem. You're on the open water.
Nah, you know what I'm saying, man?
You're talking about like shitting some portside heaters off that
salmon.
Like, the only thing you're using beefaroni for, I think he's got raviolis here. He's got the beef ravioli. Nah. You're gonna chum the water for sharks.
My reaction was every single person in this video has an 8-pack or more. So yeah, none of them.
Yeah. So X-Pac and Kane teamed up after Triple H and China split from DX to join the corporation. Billy Gunn's also on his own. He's actually feuding with The Rock, which we'll get to. And this was Kane's first run as a babyface. I don't know if you guys knew this or saw this when you did your homework, but this run of X-Pac and Kane earned them PWI's Tag Team of the Year for 1999.
Whoa, I did not see that.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's
extra credit right there.
Known? Right?
That is extra. Who did they edge out? Do you know?
I have no clue. So it also, Glenn Jacobs often said in a few interviews how the big thing of this was it humanized the Kane character. He never spoke before this, gave him a little bit of a personality. You know, he went from this monster heel to now this babyface teaming up with a DX guy. You know, and for those of you who haven't figured out, Acolytes, they were not APA yet. We weren't there yet. they had the I don't even know what were those things acolytes on their chest.
And, yeah, it's like some satanic.
Even though it was a great tag
from the ministry. No, so it was all.
Yeah, the I always thought the symbols were like astrological
let's have these
signs.
Come out,
Aquarius, the intro
with the start of his music, and then as the pyro hits, DX's music hits, and I love that. All right. So if you're going to patch together two random dudes,
that might be the first one
team,
ever. The first mashup.
Oh, the mashup.
And it was really well done. And I thought it was interesting how Jim Ross and Lawler feel the need to go in on this and talk about it.
Yeah. I think it was like a surprise to them. Like,
it has to have been.
Yeah.
And it was also cool how they get down to the ring and they combine both of their pyro. You know, Kane does the hands up, hands down, and the turnbuckles flame up. And then X-Pac does the crotch chop.
I love it.
Pretty cool. Yeah, it was awesome.
It was a nice
red and green Christmas.
It's a good look.
I love it. Like, I'm sure this is where your minds went to too, and I bet you this is in your notes too. Is that like how much does this pave the way for Team Hell No? However many years.
Oh, later, totally. Right?
Like, it's such
without a doubt,
right?
They also have a conversation about that. X-Pac is probably out of his generation during this era, meaning that he could be an old school kind of guy, but he also could be in this generation as well. And I wholeheartedly agree, because he's often talked about being a part of storylines or having matches with guys that he feels that he could throw out bangers with. And I agree with him, be it in AEW where he could go with probably Darby Allin. He could go with Jungle Boy, guys like that. In WWE, he could have solid matches with Chad Gable or guys like maybe a Ricochet or Morrison. You could go to Impact and have solid matches there. He could still go, and for his age, because he's only maybe about 3 or 4 years older than me. Maybe he's like 48, 49 years old, I believe it is. He could still work. And like the guy said, his promos are shit. But other than that, when you get the pure Sean Waltman or you get the X-Pac or whoever's coming out of the gate, you're going to get a solid match out of him and a good storyline. So that's something that you could, it's fantasy booking, but it's legit that he can still go. Finally, to close this out, this is the episode in where this was the Y2J presentation to the WWF. This was that episode where we saw the build up for months at a time come to a close this August. And we all know that this is possibly the greatest introduction to any wrestler coming from one promotion to another. And it's, hands down, we've had conversations about this on the podcast, but yes, hands down, this has to be the greatest promos that have been done to introduce a new wrestler. And these guys talk about it. So take a listen.
Out for the second time, and he goes to cut a promo on the Big Show and tells him that he wants him in a match later in the night. But the big thing that happens is the Millennium Countdown starts going down.
Is that how it goes?
And you got it. Of course, you're the Jericho guy. And,
how about what's that other music they play in the middle between after the countdown and before Jericho's music? It's like some little ambient music. Did you notice?
Is it always the classic?
It's like this is Dream World.
No, it's not that. It's some. Go back and watch.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. No, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
I always like when the lady jumped up in a silhouette and had their arms out. That was my favorite part of the video.
Lights go out.
Yeah,
and I hear that pop before the pyro and Titan Drawn video starts. It's just amazing.
who are these people that know Jericho's going to be there already?
We knew. Like, we talked about this. We knew. They WWF just didn't show the signs until, like, they didn't want to show them in the beginning. They're like wait for Jericho spot.
The dirt,
like,
sheets we were active, we the and it was sheets. Like,
Matt, go ahead, you're the Jericho
the internet
guy.
They were showing starting up back signs that were in the very front row of this episode. I don't know why somebody goes to a WWF show that doesn't have Roland as Undertaker's theme with a Limp Bizkit.
On the signs, real quick, while you're talking about it, how about the guy who has a sign that says "Kane is my dentist"?
I saw that.
It's the kind of smart sign that we would have brought to a show.
100%.
Yeah, I would be the ass that would say that. I would have a sign that reads like "Ricochet is my King Puma" or some shit like that. I would be that dude. We've done it at indie shows, so it doesn't even matter. But I have to say, this show reminds me, just like with Choked Out Radio, it reminds me of why I love wrestling, because they don't do the current event stuff that we do. And I would have loved to have that mindset to do the older stuff. But with us, our personalities, Olski and I's, click to what's happening now. And this is why we do segments where we do our throwbacks, we do our watch-alongs, or we do our cutting promos, or our hot takes, or our hot tags to certain eras in wrestling. But podcasts like this makes me realize why I am a wrestling fan, because they can go back, look at it, reevaluate it, and see whether or not them as a kid who watched it, or a younger self who watched it, looking at it again, was it still exciting? Was it still fun? Was it good? Or it was just a sign of the times where we enjoyed it for that moment. Hell, I've done it for movies. There's movies that come up on my timeline on Facebook from years ago that I enjoyed it, and when I look at it again, I go, what the fuck was wrong with me? Shit. But it's because of the moment in time in which it happened. So I can relate when it comes to wrestling, definitely. But I have to say that the only reason why I do a extension of the podcast for this topic is because I feel as though that we need to look back at what we used to like and reflect on whether or not was it really good, or was it good because we liked it for the era. And I think that Choked Out Radio and the Extra Cooler podcast, they touched down on that aspect of our lives, and really reflected on whether or not we were right for our thoughts and love during that era. Make sure you check us out on all the social media podcast outlets. Make sure you check us out on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeart, iTunes, wherever you get podcasts. This is where you can get it. Get Turnbuckle Tabloid. You get these segments. You get these shows. You could never say that you can't find this podcast, because it's everywhere. I know, because I looked it up. I've done my research. If anyone says, where are you at? I'll be like, you're full of shit. You didn't search it. It's everywhere. So make sure you search on Google or Safari, where it is that you look us up. Turnbuckle Tabloid, you'll always find us. Turnbuckle Tabloid. And if not, you could always go to RageWorksNetwork.com. RageWorksNetwork.com has all the podcasts that affiliates with the RageWorks family. Black is the New Black, Toys and Techs, Trek Untold, and much, much more. Guys, don't bullshit me. You could always find us if you really want to, and you should. And always check us out on the social media outlets, Facebook, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok. We're everywhere. We're We're expanding, ladies and gentlemen. We just want to make sure you're expanding with us. Guys, show love to these guys who we share love to this episode. I'll put you over another episode in the books, and we'll see you soon. Take a bump, guys. We're out.
Turnbuckle Tabloid.